I was talking to Scott, who was just up here. He's taking a class, and he said that his prof talked about this church in Seoul, South Korea. This church is called Yoido Full Gospel Church. He said that this church has an average weekly attendance of 1 million people. 1 million people. Coffee people, can you imagine how much coffee that would be for 1 million people? That would be a few more chairs for us to set up, and we'd need a bigger place. They have a Sunday school there of 38,000 people in this class, and they have 526 pastors on staff. They say that 5% of the entire city of Seoul attends this church. They proclaim Jesus. They follow him. They pledge their allegiance to him. Take Africa. I'm just going to just take the big continent of Africa as a swath. But there was a conference in 1910 where world missionary leaders got together, and they said, you know what? By the year 2000, 90 years from then, they said Christianity is going to be wiped off the face of Africa because other religions are taking shape. They're growing in popularity, and Christianity is diminishing. They said by the year 2000, there's going to be zero Christians in the continent of Africa. Well, by 2018 statistics, there are 542 million people who declare their allegiance to Jesus Christ. That is 40% of the population of Africa who stand up and say, I'm not following anyone else, I'm not following myself, but that Jesus is the center of my life. They follow Jesus. Jesus is alive today, friends. And if there's one thing I saw in sabbatical, it was that. But here's where I want to camp out here for this morning. As I want to give us this picture, and I want to ask us this question of this. You know, we talk about Yoido Fellowship, Full Gospel Church in South Korea. We talk about Africa. We talk about Israel and people declaring their faith in Jesus. What does this term, following Jesus, mean? And I want to present it to us here today. When I say this word, following Jesus, or what does following Jesus mean to you, what picture do you get in your mind? And I want us to stop and think about that. I don't want to rush too fast. Because some of us here, I know, have been Christians for a long time. You may say, Jeff, it was like 40 years ago when I declared that I wanted to follow Jesus. It just means that, you know, you get a picture in your head, and I don't want to tell you what it means. But what is your picture in your head of what it means to follow Jesus? You see, the reason I don't want to go too fast on this is because I think what we can do is in our time, being a follower of Jesus, we might mean like, you know what, over time we need to know the latest and the greatest. Is there something more and a new level I need to reach, or what else is there? And we come back to this invitation, and I want to come back to this morning, of this invitation that Jesus gave to some disciples, some strangers, years and years ago, which is for us today. It's from Matthew 4, and he says to people, he says, come, follow me, and I will make you fishers of people. You see, how we picture something is how we live our lives. How we picture something in our brain is how we actually play our lives out. So for example, if I said this, what is your picture of being a parent? And you may say to me, your first response might be, it is primarily to make sure that my family is taken care of. It's to put food on the table, to make sure that I've built up an RESP for them, that they can get a house when they get older, and then they can live a happy life. You see, already, you have crafted a picture of parenthood in your mind of what is primarily important to you, and you will act that out. So perhaps, and I'm not saying it's fully neglecting of this, but if that's your primary purpose, you might see relationship or bedtime stories or being at home kind of secondary. And you see, my badge is that I work hard for my family. And yes, I'm away and I'm out of town, and I don't even know my family that well, but at least I provide for them. That is a picture that you live off of because of what you've created. You see, all of us, I think, probably have maybe perhaps different views of what it means to follow Jesus. But however we frame that in our mind and construct that, we will then live that out. For some of us, it just means I'm going to ascribe to the fact that there is something bigger in this universe. For some of us, it's like, you know what, I'll attend church, and I'll drink coffee and listen to what the pastor says and enjoy the songs. For others of us, we struggle with, is there more to life than just those things? What does it mean to go deeper into following Jesus and what he intended? So this is what we frame both campuses, both at Walnut Grove and here. We've been doing this for the last year, and this is kind of our umbrella of how we want to continue to look at everything we do as a church. It's going to be framed by this question: what does it mean to follow Jesus? You see, I don't know how you grew up or are growing up, but when I grew up, I did not know what it meant to follow Jesus. I had no idea what this term meant. Our family was a go-to-church-twice-a-year kind of family. I went to appease my parents. I had no other choice. I was 10 years old, and I'm not allowed to stay home, so off I go. And to me, church was honestly just boring. People were nice. Everything was fine there, but it was just boring for me. If you were going to ask what 10-year-old Jeff thought what it meant to follow Jesus, I would have told you that God, he's real, but God is at an arm's length. He's kind of distant. He's not someone who's close or personal. He's someone that I believe in, that I go to church twice a year to kind of see and see other people worship him. But for me personally, it wasn't anything personal. But as I've learned a little bit over the years, I'm continually challenged with this view of God that John Stott says about God. And he says this, and I'm so challenged by it. He says, God is not a fit object for man's detached scrutiny. You cannot fix God at the end of a telescope or a microscope and say, how interesting. God is not simply interesting. We know that to follow Jesus Christ is actually inconvenient. Think about that in our convenient culture. That to follow him is actually inconvenient. And listen to this. It involves the rethinking of our whole outlook on life. Don't you just sit there and go, ugh, that's challenging. That's hard. Inconvenient and rethinking my whole entire outlook on life. I listen to those words myself and I get challenged every single time I think about that. God is not actually meant to be at an arm's length, to be twice a year and just, this is what I want in your life. God wants something much closer. He wants it actually to be inconvenient in our life. And he wants us to rethink our whole life continually because of following Jesus. Well, we're going to look at Matthew chapter 4. I've already mentioned it a little bit, but we're going to look a little bit deeper at this. It's in the very first book of the New Testament. The Bible separated into the Old Testament and the New Testament. If you open the New Testament, it starts off with the book of Matthew. And that's where we're going to go today, into Matthew chapter 4. And there's a story here that Jesus has about walking beside the Sea of Galilee. And I know I can picture that in my mind. It was we were there. It's actually a lake. It's not a sea, but they call it a sea. And it's really, really beautiful. But Jesus living in that area, it says here in Matthew chapter 4, it says, as Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come, follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. And listen to this response. At once they left their nets and followed him. And going on from there, now there's, Jesus and a few people following him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called them, and immediately they left their boat and their father and followed him. Now, I don't know if you've read this before, but this is an astounding passage. This is a radical passage, and honestly, doesn't it sound like a bit of a weird passage? To reconcile this fact that this figure, Jesus walks up and just calls two sets of brothers, and they drop everything and follow him. I want to look into this just for a minute, because there's two seemingly, just very strange things about this story. Number one, Jesus calls seeming strangers, and what do? They listen. They listen. Now, what are we told about growing up and strangers? Don't talk to strangers, right? Don't do it. Someone approaches you, you run away. Never go off with strangers. But think about this. When in the last week, maybe you're sitting at a red light and someone pulls up beside you, rolls the window down, and says, hey, do you want to go for coffee? It's a complete stranger. And you're like, to be honest, I'm on my way to work, but sure, why not? I'll go for coffee with you. That just doesn't happen. We roll up our window and go away really fast. And yet Jesus is here calling four men to follow him. They knew what he meant when he said, follow him. You see, Jesus had started to teach in the synagogues. He was kind of known as a rabbi figure, a Jewish person with authority. And so when someone said to you, follow me, it wasn't just, can you come and grab coffee with me? It meant drop everything you're doing and follow me with your life. Now, you might think they deliberated for a while. If this is such a grand call, don't you think like maybe they would say, it says here that the brothers got together and talked to their dad and said, should we go with him? Let's weigh the pros and cons. Let's make a list of do's and don'ts. And it says, you know what? After much deliberation, they decided to follow Jesus. It doesn't say that. Verse 20, it says, Peter and Andrew left their nets at once and followed him. In verse 22, the other two brothers, James and John, it says they heard Jesus and immediately. There is no way to transcribe that into the English language or the Greek language as contemplating. It's immediately, and what it means in the English language is immediately. They left their boats and their father and followed him. So if that part doesn't weird you out, you know, following a seeming stranger, maybe the second part does. And that is this. They actually had no idea what they were doing. They had no idea what they were doing. Now, who knows how old they are, but I would guess they're probably in their late teens to early 20s or maybe even older. Probably older. And they know what life looks like to this point. Just like we kind of do. You know, we get into our work and our schedules and we know what we're doing. These guys knew what they were doing as well. But you see, in our day, we tell our kids, you guys can do anything you want. Right? When our kids are young and we look at them and they're like, what should I be when I grow up? And you go, dear, the child or the sky's the limit. You can be a teacher. You can be an engineer. You can even be a rocket scientist. Even though maybe in our brains for some of our kids, we're like, fat chance of that. You know, maybe, just joking. We really truly believe that they can be anything they want and they can do whatever they want. Whatever limits we may think, we still say to them, they have a choice. So whatever I do, if I'm a pastor, you know, my children will not follow necessarily into being a pastor, although I'll love them more if they do. But when you think about the time in Israel at this time, people had no such freedom. You literally did what your family did. You followed the family business. It's just what you did. So if your family was a farming family, guess what you got to do when you grew up? You just learned as a very young person, apprenticed into being a farmer so that one day, mom and dad will not live forever, so that you will take over the family business as a farmer. If your family was a carpenter, and that's what they did as an industry, as a living, you learned under your father to be a carpenter. And that's the reason why Jesus was a carpenter up until the age of 30. It's because Joseph, his dad, was a carpenter. It wasn't like Jesus went to BCIT and decided to take carpentry. It's just how things took place. And if your parents were fishermen, guess what you got to be when you grew up? A fisherman. It's just how things were. Even in Israel today, as our family walked through the old city, we talked to a lot of shopkeepers. And some of them said that they have owned the shop that they own at that time for over 200 years. It's been in the family that long. And so they don't grow up and go to school, and a lot of them don't, and grow up and do whatever they want, although there's more and more people in Israel doing that now. They said, I grew up to run the family business. We've been here for over 200 years, and I'm selling the same things over and over and over again. And in fact, I've got kids who are going to grow up and take this business from me. And it's funny actually walking through, because these shopkeepers just love to get you in their store however they can. So today, 50% off, you know, and you're like, you know darn well that they've raised the price and jacked it up already 200%. What was really funny was one guy yelled all the time, he was like, 100% off today only. And I'm like, I don't know what that means here, but in Canada that means free. Is that what you're telling us? I'm like, woo, but I don't think it meant that. But anyway, it's just what you did. It's embedded in the family line. And so for Peter, Andrew, James, and John, they don't have other options. They are going to take over the family business. And they knew it really well. When Jesus came and approached them to follow him, they knew exactly what they were doing and how to fish. There was different techniques of fishing. They knew them all. They had been well-versed in that. They were professionals at it. And they were just slowly taking over the family business. This whole following Jesus thing, however, they had no idea what that meant. They had seen other students follow rabbis and become learners of the law and the Torah and all of these things. But to follow Jesus, when he's saying, follow me, they had no idea what that meant in the years to come. And so I find it incredibly radical that they would drop everything immediately and follow Jesus. But that's how it was. That's just how it was. But here's what I want to say. There's a bit of a kicker to this that we don't have the privilege in the book of Matthew to understand. See, Matthew doesn't mention this, but that Jesus actually was not a stranger to these young men. We may read it that, you know, a stranger approaches and they follow him, but if we understand kind of the four books of Jesus' life, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, we have to piece them together to understand the chronology of events that actually play into Matthew chapter 4. See, in the book of John, we're actually told that these four men, these four brothers, knew Jesus before. And that helps lay the foundation of why they decided to drop everything and follow him. They had been with Jesus. They knew Jesus. We know this in the book of John. Before a man by the name of John the Baptist baptized Jesus, we know that these four men hung out with Jesus. Their villages were not that far away from each other in Israel, and the communities that they lived in weren't that big. And so they would often travel from one village to another to visit with each other. Community was a huge thing. And so undoubtedly, in Jesus' first 30 years of life, of course they would have spent time with him and knew him. And then they find out that there's a wedding in the village of Cana, which isn't very far from either of their homes. And they actually realize that on that same guest list is this man, Jesus, who they've gotten to know a little bit. And it's there that Jesus squelches the fears and the anxieties of the mom of the bride and groom when they run out of wine. And she approaches Jesus and goes, help me. And they watch as Jesus takes these barrels of water and turns them into the best wine that they have had all night. And we're told in John 2:11, what Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory. And I love this line afterwards. And his disciples, the people that started to follow him, believed in him. You see, this is the backdrop to Matthew chapter 4. And this is where things kind of start to come together. We don't have this radical scene where these strangers see this man walking down with maybe with long flowing hair and a sash just going, follow me, follow me. They already knew him. They already had a relationship with this man coming down the beach. And yes, they didn't know what they were doing, but they knew that they were called and that they had to go and follow because nothing else in their life would satisfy. Author Michael Wilkins states this about their decision to follow Jesus. He says, this was no emotion, spur-of-the-moment decision. They must have been waiting for this momentous occasion to join Jesus as he embarks on his kingdom mission. They were just chomping at the bit, wondering, when is this going to happen? And so when they saw Jesus come, I'm getting rid of this, and I'm just following Jesus. These men literally dropped what was in their hands and turned and followed him. So I want to present that question for us again and ask you what that picture looks like for us. What does it mean to follow Jesus? See, here's what I love about Jesus' invitation. You might think sometimes it's a bit of a stretch for pastors or people to say, well, that same invitation that Jesus gave those men is the same for all of us today. Well, in a sense, it's not, because it was very contextual. It was for that time and that place. We're not fishermen. We do other things. And Jesus at that time called them to follow him in his kingdom mission on earth. However, the invitation that Jesus has is for all of us still today. We know this because in the very last book of the Bible, in the book of Revelation, in chapter 3, Jesus says this, and it's an open invitation to the seven churches in which he writes these letters to, but symbolizes all of creation. And he says, "Behold, I stand at the door and I knock." And he says, "If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with that person." It's a sign of community. A meal together was a very intimate thing, and a relationship would have been established. He says, "I will eat with that person and they with me." What does it mean to follow Jesus? I want to give us a bit of a practical look at what this looks like. And so to do that, I want to invite my good friend Steve Dinsey up here. And I've asked Steve. Steve is, I don't want to say just an ordinary guy, because Steve is a fantastic guy. But Steve, I know by his own admission, will not say he's like some super Christian. He wasn't walking along a beach one day, and Jesus called him, and he just started coming. Steve is a person who attends Yorkson. He's a father, he's a husband, and he is a follower of Jesus. And so what I wanted to do, Steve, is talk to you. You know this already. This isn't on the spot, so don't worry, guys. And Steve has been begging me for months and months, "Can I just come up and talk on the stage somehow?" And I said, "Finally, I'll give you this shot, Steve." No, Steve is he's actually not... public speaking, you would say, is not your most thing that you're excited about in life. And yet when I asked him, I said, "Would you come up and just share a little bit about what it means to follow Jesus for you and what picture you get and how you live that out?" Steve jumped at it and said, "You know what, I'm not excited about speaking in front of people, but to share about this, I would love to." So I'm going to switch over to this. And Steve, I'm going to let you talk here, because I know I've given you these questions and allowed you to kind of formulate these things already. And so I appreciate already your honesty and vulnerability and sharing with all of us. But I want to ask you first, when did you decide to follow Jesus? And what did it look like for you? Was it when you were like 6 years old as a kid? Or were you walking down Willoughby and there was a burning bush experience and God spoke to you? Or just tell me maybe what that looked like when you first decided to follow him.
Hello? Oh.
You're good. You're live.
I grew up in a Christian home, and I grew up going to a Christian school. So I actually gave my life to God fairly early on. But as I got older and got into my late teens, it just didn't feel real to me. And it seemed more like it was my parents' religion, and I started drifting away, and I actually ended up turning my back on that part of my life. And then about 4.5 years ago, at a time where I was really struggling with a lot of different things, there was a night that I remember sitting in my study and just kind of mind going crazy, and just looked at my bookshelf and I saw one of my old Bibles that I had from school. And I remember opening it up and looking through it and seeing highlighted passages that I had marked and notes I had written over the years ago. And I just started praying, and I started to feel this calmness and this feeling come over me, and I felt the Lord telling me that even though I had turned away, he had never turned away from me, and he had always been there, and he was waiting for me to come back and open that door.
Appreciate that. Thinking of that picture of what it meant to follow Jesus when you were younger, and maybe thinking of that time when you decided, you know what, you know, I don't get a sense from you that it was one day you just said, forget faith, forget church, forget everything, I'm going to walk. But what did that picture look like for you as you started down that road of going, nah, I don't need this Jesus thing in my life? Do you remember what that felt like, or what kind of caused that in you?
Yeah, I don't think it was a conscious decision not to experience that anymore. It just was more of a feeling of wanting to do things my way and just live life the way I wanted to do it. And I was suffering for some depression and some things at that point in my life that kind of led me down a path of self-destruction almost for a long time.
Yeah, again, I appreciate your honesty with this. I know it's not easy with a few people listening in on the two of us talking here, but I appreciate that. Thinking of that season, how many years ago was it then when you said, you know, it was this kind of experience where you just opened your Bible, started reading through things? Walk me through that a little bit more. What caused you to actually grab the Bible, and also then what started that journey, I think, back into faith and following Jesus for you?
I was really not happy with my life at that point. There was things going on at work that I just didn't feel right about that I was involved with, and there was some family issues that I just couldn't quite understand or wrap my head around, and I just remember feeling so lost and just didn't know what to do at that point. And that was about 4.5 years ago, I think, maybe just over. And I just didn't know what to do. And that's when I had my burning bush moment, and I heard God speak to me, and that's the path I've been on since.
So to finish off this little time here, tell me about that path a little bit, or describe for everyone, or if it freaks you out looking out, just you can look at me. Give me a little picture of what that looked like for you, or what it has looked like for you. In other words, this picture of following Jesus now. I'm going to go on a limb and say that it probably hasn't been perfect 100% of the time. And I know that, you know, I'm sure there's been great days and hard days and all of that, but give me a little bit of a picture of that journey of following Jesus today and what that means for you.
It's actually been an amazing journey since that's happened. It hasn't been easy sometimes. I don't think Jesus said it was going to be easy, or that we wouldn't have hardships and struggles.
Kind of that inconvenience thing that I talked about earlier.
Yeah. But he did promise that he would give us the strength to deal with things, and that he would never leave us through the good or the bad. I feel my life is drastically different now than it was 5 years ago, and most people that knew me back then probably wouldn't recognize the person I am now. I've found a church I love to come to, and I love setting up and helping and even greeting once a month. That being such a quiet and introverted person was something that's quite amazing to me, that's now a part of my life. I've volunteered every week, one night, at a thrift store that's run by a Christian organization that believes the same things I do, and supports ministries that I do support also. My whole focus in life has turned from an inward, selfish kind of me first and what can people do for me to a life that I've put God and love him first and then people second and kind of me at the end. And I found happiness doing that. And and recently I've become a mentor with a ministry called Crossroads Ministries that writes letters and creates lessons for inmates in jail, and it's been a real blessing for me to do that and to read about that and try to feed some hope into some people in a place where there's not much hope. And
how has that been for you? Has it been inspiring, encouraging, challenging, or maybe all of the above?
Definitely all of the above. It's been an amazing thing just to do that, and I think it probably helps me just as much as it helps the people I'm writing to, because it makes me look at things in a different way it's quite amazing.
Yeah, and I know through all of this, you know, everyone's like, wow, there's a lot that you do and a lot of amazing ways that you serve now, and I know, you know, Steve would be the first to say there's a lot of difficult things within the journey as well and hard days, but I love how your center and following Jesus has gone from kind of Steve Dinsey at the center to Jesus being there and just listening to him, to follow him through those days and through that. Your family is here, which, you know, we've loved. We love having your family be a part of the community here, and each of them have their own story, and they're just awesome people. And it's just really a pleasure to have you guys a part of our Yorkson community. So can we give Steve a big hand for doing this? Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for having me.
I know even for some of you extroverts, it's maybe a bit of a challenge to get up here, but Steve, the admitted introvert, you have so many good things to say, and we appreciate that, Steve, so much. What does that picture look like for you? How would you answer that question? What does it mean to follow Jesus? I want to say that I respect and understand that there are so many different responses to that this morning, but I want to just close our time with three things, three ways that I've kind of picked out that might be most prevalent, most common here in our response to say, what does it look like to follow Jesus? The first one is this. Actually, no thank you. Following Jesus, wherever else you want to take that, no thank you. You might be here and you just out and out reject the claims of Jesus. Maybe you would say he lived, but he certainly wasn't the Son of God. Or if he was the Son of God, he certainly didn't die and rise again and certainly doesn't have any relevance for me today. Or you would just say, you know what, religion isn't for me, thank you very much. And if that is you here this morning, I just want to say that I appreciate your honesty to yourself. You may never say that in the coffee lineup or when you come into church as we greet you. You may smile and look the part, and you may come because you know that it makes your spouse happy, or it's just a good thing to bring your children to, or whatever the case may be. But you might just say, I don't believe. I want to say this, is that you are welcome here as often as you come. This church is not just for church people. It's not just for people who believe in Jesus, who want to grow deeper. It is for all people on Donut Sunday and every other Sunday. So you may want to pick on your calendar, especially some of those days that we do other things. Potluck Sunday, I'm there. But we want to just let you know, again, Steve, you said it so well, and I think what we got out of that as well is that it's a journey. It's not like we decide one day, I want to follow Jesus, and suddenly life is amazing, and we win lotteries, and our marriages become spectacular, and our kids just get 4.0 GPAs in college, and everything just turns upward. Just follow Jesus. Steve said it well. Jesus says, in this world, you will have trouble. But I want to just say, everyone is welcome here all the time. And you might say, I just come to be happy. I just live my life to be happy. I want my kids to be happy. I want to provide for them. I go through work, and I do what I think is meaningful to me. And to be honest, I just want to be happy in life. Is that wrong? And I would say absolutely not. But is happiness really the answer? And that's where I want to challenge if you answer that question this way. Is happiness in life really the answer that we will go through maybe even 80 or 90 years of life and be happy at the end? Actor Matthew McConaughey, I don't think is a committed follower of Jesus, but he says this about happiness. He says there's limits to it. He says happiness actually demands a certain outcome, and it is result reliant. If happiness is what you're after, then you're going to be let down frequently, and you're going to be unhappy most of the time. Instead, I so appreciate this humble prayer of survivalist Bear Grylls. 2 weeks ago, when Matthew showed the Alpha video, he was on it. He's the survival guy you've seen on some shows. He lives in the wild, off the wild, eats bugs for a living, and all these types of things. But he says this. He says, I really desperately have learned in my faith, in my life, that I need my faith, and that I'm just not strong enough on my own. I try to start every day by kneeling down and saying, Lord Jesus, I ain't got it right. It's not grammatically correct, but that's okay, Bear. We appreciate what you're saying. And I'm nervous about today. I will give him my all, but will you help me? I love that beautiful, humble prayer. I'm not strong enough on my own to do this. There's a second response that we can give to what does it look like to follow Jesus. And it's this simple phrase, meh. It's this response that we give to our friends or our spouse when they ask what we want to watch on Netflix. It's the response our children give when we ask how their day was at school. You know that answer. It's like you're caught in this world of ambivalence. There's no conviction or passion. What does it mean to follow Jesus? Nah. You know what? I've been a Christian a long time, Jeff, and I'm on cruise control. I go to church, I do some things, I serve, and hopefully God likes me more than he doesn't like me for the things that I shouldn't be doing. If anything, you would describe God, as I did as a 10-year-old, at arm's length. God is certainly not personal, and I can't really have him be that way. Because I may profess to follow Jesus, but honestly, there are still so many aspects in my life that are mine and that I'm the center of them. I can confess and profess a faith, but I'm still very much in charge of my own money. Jesus, you don't have that. I get to choose. I've made it, I earn it, and it is where I want to spend it. I profess to follow Jesus, but he doesn't have a say in every activity that I do. After all, some of us have some bad things that we do, don't we? I may profess to follow Jesus, but I can deal with the troubles in my life, whether it be finance, whether it be relationships, whether it be work. I can handle these things on my own. Thank you very much. Sometimes when I talk to people, they feel this very, very, very much. Meh. And I want to tell you today that if this is you, you are not alone. And I want to say you're not a bad person. You're not a bad Christian if you're in this season of life. A lot of people have asked me even this summer, how was your summer? Was it amazing? Was it did you experience a ton? Are you so refreshed? And I would say yes to all of those things. But if I am absolutely honest with you, not every day was a beautiful honeymoon with Jesus. It wasn't this mountaintop experience where every day I talked to him and just got fed by him and just relished in his presence. There were days like that, and I experienced it. But I'll be absolutely honest with you. There were days, this summer, that it was just kind of meh. Ambivalence. You're like, what? That was you? Yes. There are seasons of our life that we all go through this. And I just have to tell you, that Jesus is not here to smite us, that we don't have to play games with Jesus or others to pretend that we're at a place that we're not. And if we are in this place of meh, I have to tell you this as well. Jesus is as much on his throne in the meh seasons of life that he is when we're as close to him as we just couldn't get closer to him. That Jesus is still very much alive today and his kingdom is being ushered into this world, even in spite of our lack of faith. My prayer for us who are in that season, and if you're in that season today or you know what it's like, is to remember that Jesus is on his throne, that Jesus is at work in our lives, and Jesus' invitation to come follow me is alive now as it always has been. So don't think that you will be stuck in this nebulous forever. You might need to just do some of the habits that you know that we need to do, that God would speak to us, things like prayer or journaling, being in community, these types of things that can help us, move us from meh to Jesus, I love you. And I see you at work. But sometimes all we can do is offer a, God, will you help me today? The third response to Jesus' invitation, or how we respond to this question, is this. Yes, I'm in, but what's next? I want to follow Jesus, but I don't know the next step. And I think we would be doing a massive disservice as a church to say, just continue to grow in Jesus, and we hope for the best of you, and have a great day. But what we've done as church leaders, both paid and volunteers, we've wrestled with this question. What does it mean to follow Jesus? To not play games, not do the religion thing, but how do we actually, all of us, every single one of us in our lives, begin to follow Jesus deeper? What does that next step look like? And so we're posing this question for us as leaders, for everyone here, is to think about this. What is our next step? We've got some pamphlets at the back. that can help us in regards to next steps. The last thing I want to sound is formulaic. As long as you do A, B, and C, you will reach D, and I guarantee it. But I also want to say this. I want to caution us to say these things are only optional and that you will grow regardless or irregardless of these things. I hope this makes sense. We're trying to put in tangible steps so that we can take handles that as we move along, if we're at this point of our life in our faith, that we can take this step. We may not take 12 steps this year, and that's okay. But what does it mean to take the next step in following Jesus, to abandon the things that we have known, to place him at the center of our life and follow him? Maybe for some of us, maybe you caught a glimpse of the Alpha video if you were here 2 weeks ago. If you weren't, we run a 10-week series called Alpha that just talks about understanding what Christianity is all about and the claims of Jesus. There is no pressure attached to it. You get a free meal cooked by one of our top chefs in our church, and it is all free, and it is awesome. You get some great communication and conversation, and you can ask any question you want. And if you want any information on that, Alana, where are you, Alana? You're in the back. She's in the back waving her hands, and I will tell you this. If you're wondering if you should take it or not, go talk to Alana for literally 30 seconds, and you will be signed up. And you might be wondering, how did I get signed up? It's because you talked to Alana. She's so excited about that, and she would love to tell you more about that. For some of us, we've heard about Jesus. We know about Jesus, but we know now's the time for me to take that step of faith, to take myself out of the center of my life and allow Jesus to be there. I want to ask us, if you've been kind of on the fringe of this, what is stopping you from taking that step of following Jesus? It's to say, Jesus, I understand that I have done wrong things. And yet, Jesus, I want you to forgive me and become center stage in my life. We would love to talk to you further about that. There are people in the prayer room on your left there. There are people up front here afterwards that we would just love to talk to you about that. Maybe it's deciding to get baptized and saying, I believe in Jesus, I follow him. I've just never publicly professed this. I will tell you, being baptized doesn't make you a Christian. But there's something very spiritually significant about standing in front of people and saying, I declare my following and my allegiance to Jesus. We're going to be having baptisms in a couple of months, and we would love to see so many people just get dunked in this big tank of water that we're going to have here. It's just such a great day, and we love hearing stories, but be thinking about that. Maybe that's the next step. There's lots more. We're going to talk about them in the weeks to come. I don't want to inundate us with all of these things, but maybe the next step, and this is a vital part that I'm going to talk about more next week, is this whole idea of community. Maybe it just means taking a next step into community. Steve talked a little bit about that as well, and I know that, Steve, you would say this, is that you're not where you are today if it wasn't for the community around you, for the men who have come around you and that not only have helped and encouraged and inspired you, but you have had the same reciprocal effect on them. And some of us here think, I can do this whole Christian thing on my own, and the reality is we cannot do it on our own. There's a series coming up in later September that we're really excited about as a church called Life Together. And it's a four-week series at the church for anyone who's looking to get involved in a life group. And this is going to be a very experiential time. It's not going to be just one big seminar for four Thursdays in a row. We're going to go, we're going to eat, we're going to talk about what it means a little bit more to do life together. Because we are stronger together than apart. And maybe you just need to say, I don't know if I'm going to join one. I don't know what that looks like, but all I'm going to do is commit to coming to this. It starts September 26th, and we would love to have you there. Following Jesus. What does it mean, and what picture do we get about following Jesus? And for all of us, what is our next step in following him? Would you join with me as we pray? Jesus, we love you. But Jesus, I want to say more than that, thank you that you love us. And that we can go back a couple thousand years to you walking on a beach and this radical call to people to follow you. And God, I thank you for their obedience and their understanding, even a glimpse of what you were calling them to, that they would drop everything and that realize that following you is the greatest thing that they could possibly do. Father, we are so blessed in our world, so blessed with the people around us, with the jobs we have, with us, so many things. And God, through all of this, I pray that we all would see, myself included, more and more and more, this picture and vision of what you have for our lives. That following you is the best thing that we could ever do in our lives, and that you desire for us to do that our entire life. And so, Father, would you speak to us today
Thank you that you are alive. Thank you that you are at work. And thank you that you invite us to follow you. In Jesus' name, amen.